is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. After years of bipartisan bickering and deadline extensions, Congress finally passed the Farm Bill this week. The massive legislation covers everything from crop subsidies and organic research to food assistance and conservation programs. Here today to talk about the new five-year Farm Bill are Democratic Representative Ron Kind of La Crosse and Darren Von Ruden, President of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Congressman Kind, you actually voted against this farm bill. All of Wisconsin's Democratic representatives, as well as Republican Jim Sensenbrenner, voted against it. Everyone has their own reasons, but why did you decide that this was not the farm bill for you?
Listen, I'm not the enemy of the good here. I was hoping it would be a better bill, and I think it pulled up short in a variety of areas. First of all, it will take food away from hungry people in order to maintain some pretty generous subsidies for the most wealthy in this country, which I think fundamentally is wrong. And you're only given an opportunity once every 5 years, in this case 7 years, to reform farm policy. So it is more responsive to the needs of family farmers back home here, but also more responsible to the American taxpayer. And on the taxpayer front, there are certain reforms I've been advocating for a long time, which I think makes sense to move us away from these huge taxpayer subsidies that go to a few but very large agribusinesses at the expense of family farmers, which will lead to greater consolidation of production agriculture, drive land values up, make it harder for new beginning farmers to begin a career in this field, and not responsible to the American taxpayer. So all things considered, I had a feeling that since so many people working so hard were at a point of exhaustion and fatigue, this was going to pass. But you also, I think, need some honest critics out there to keep people honest and to keep moving in the direction of reform. And I think these are important enough to fight for.
So, Darren, when you've talked with other farmers, what's your impression or their overall impression with this farm bill?
Well, you know, it was something that was needed, with two extensions and not really knowing what was going to happen the next year. It puts a little bit of a struggle, not only financially, but just emotionally on farmers, not knowing what's going to happen in the next year.
Because it affects your planning for the year ahead.
Right. You know, it depends on if you want to look for more acres to rent or if you want to plant different crops. You know, it all depends on what happens with the farm bill, because farmers don't control Mother Nature, and that's one of the biggest struggles that most farmers have is what happens with Mother Nature. But the majority of farmers, I think, are happy to see the farm bill. But then there also is, a good number of farmers that aren't happy with it simply because of some of the provisions in there that are allowing taxpayer money to go to the largest farms that, if they want to take that risk and get that big, why is taxpayer having to subsidize them?
Everyone's talked about the fact that they're not happy that the subsidies weren't reduced enough and that there are wealthy landowners that are still receiving money. So why is this still happening, Congressman Kind?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I've been through a couple farm bills now before, and it always perplexes me why we're not more successful in reforming these really outdated subsidy programs that are skewed to a few, but at the top.
And can you break it down for people exactly how this works,
too? Yeah, a lot of it's based on certain commodity crops that are produced. Coming out of this farm bill now, there's certain target prices that are established at an all-time high for these commodity prices. So if the market price drops even a little bit, there's going to be a lot of money going out the door. And obviously, the bigger you are, the more you're going to collect as a consequence. You know, there was just a recent report from the General Accountability Office that showed that we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year that go to multi-billionaires in this country, not because they're farming, like people like Darren working the land, but because they're landowners. That's wrong. We ought to be shutting that down, because I'll bet you anything that these multi-billionaires don't even know that they're getting these subsidies under the farm bill. It's just an accounting measure for them. And while we did end the direct payment program, and these were automatic payments that went out based on past production history, not what's being produced today, a lot of that money was funneled into a new crop insurance expansion program. I am a believer in crop insurance. I think it's a good risk management tool. I'm afraid that if you heavily subsidize the premiums, you could start taking risk out of planting decisions, which can lead to bad results. But what really irritates me is there's a handful of crop insurance companies offering these policies, private crop insurance companies. Under this farm bill, they're going to be guaranteed a 14% profit. They won't have to pay for any of their administrative and operating expenses, and they bear very little risk. Now, there's not a business in the world that wouldn't take that offer, so why are we making it in this farm bill? And five of the 10 biggest insurance companies are foreign-owned. So there are areas that we could have been reforming. And finally, I've been a big critic of the fact that we're sending $150 million every year that now subsidizes Brazil cotton farmers because of Congress's unwillingness to reform our own cotton subsidy program. That wasn't fixed under the Farm Bill. So either Brazil can level economic sanctions against us before long, which will probably hit dairy producers, which is one area that they're targeting, or we're going to have to continue those subsidies to Brazil cotton farmers. And I don't think the average person back home wants to see that continue.
Darren?
The biggest part of it is that the number of farmers in this country is about half of what it was 25, 30 years ago. And the majority of that reason is because the larger farmers are taking more of the government dollars. If we had those dollars that were available going into the smaller farmers' hands, I truly believe, too, we need to have competition in the country. And the less farmers we get, the less competition we have. And until we start to turn those numbers the other way, it's going to be a problem. And this Farm Bill doesn't really address that with subsidies. The Brazilian cotton issue is big. There's no reason why we should be sending that money across the ocean. That should be staying here to build young farmer programs and get young producers back in the business. Because average age of dairy farmers is 58. That's not too long, and they're going to be retired. And who's going to be the next generation coming in?
So with this shift from eliminating direct payments to the crop insurance programs, can you explain how that transition will affect you and other farmers within Western Wisconsin?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that farmers are going to have to do a little bit more research into who's going to be their insurance company. One of the provisions that we really like that's in the Farm Bill, too, is they have to be I can't think of what it is. Conservation compliance. Oh, sure. Thanks, Ron. Conservation compliance was something that we were really fighting for and ended up getting that. And I think that's going to protect some of our lands that are like your highly erodible lands, your swamps that should not be drained, because all those things are part of the ecosystem that need to stay where they're at. And so the conservation compliance thing was big for us.
And that's a classic example of a good thing being accomplished in this Farm Bill. I mean, there was conservation compliance requirement to receive direct payments. That potentially could have gone away if it wasn't attached to the crop insurance program. But listen, I've been on a lot of farms throughout Western Wisconsin, including Darren. They want to be good stewards of the land, and it's important that they are, not only for their own production capability, but to reduce sediment and nutrient flows. Outdoor recreation is a huge part of our economy here in Wisconsin. Quality water supplies is vital for any community to be successful. And so maintaining that attachment to the land with these conservation plans is important. There was also some consolidation with some of the conservation programs, which makes sense. We're able to take a more regional approach on watershed management under this bill. But they also took $7 billion out of the conservation title. And that's money that we leverage working with farmers like Darren to help them put good conservation plans in place, whether it's land or water plans. That's going to make it more challenging to do, even though the demand for those funds and for those programs are going up.
So you both have talked about how you wish that maybe Congress would have addressed the subsidy issue, especially when it comes to larger farms. But what about subsidies for smaller family farms or mid-sized farms? Are subsidies useful and necessary for farms of those sizes?
Yeah, I would say definitely yes. There's been a lot of years in the past 25 years where, especially on dairy side, that like the EQIP program, there's dairy farmers have used that to either put in waterways or put in manure handling systems so that they can don't have to spread manure in the middle of winter. And so programs like that have definitely helped small family farmers. But with the way the system has been lately, it seems like there's only so many dollars available. And if you're not on top of the eight ball, you're usually underneath it, which means that you get nothing. And the majority of those dollars over the last half a dozen years or so have been going to the largest farms rather than the small, spreading it out over a larger number of farms.
If the subsidies didn't exist, what would our farming landscape look like in Wisconsin?
Someone who's represented a large agricultural producing region in the country, my respect and admiration for our family farmers is only going up every year. I mean, they have a tough job that they are dependent on a lot of factors beyond their control. The market price isn't always kind to them when it comes to getting a decent pay for the labor that they put in. A lot of their fixed costs continue to go up every year, whether it's energy, whether it's equipment. I'd throw healthcare expenses in that equation too. And so it is tough to make it as a family farmer. And that's why I've been a supporter of real, you know, safety nets for them, so that when the price does fluctuate and it does bottom out from time to time, especially for dairy farmers, that they're not forced to just to go out of business. Because once you lose them, it's tough to get that back. And as Darren alluded to earlier, if you have more consolidation, you have less competition. And that means at the end of the day, we're going to be more dependent on a few but very big producers for all of our food needs in this country. And that is not going to be a good place to end up.
Darren?
If we continue down this road, which it seems like this farm bill is putting us in that position, you're going to see less and less farmers, and I think some of the you know, more positive things on the farm bill too. Ron just alluded to a little bit of the energy costs that farmers have. You look at what's happening with propane in the state of Wisconsin here right now. You know, Mother Nature has a lot more to do with that price than farmers do, actually. But you know, it's one of those things that we need to address. The market conditions on a yearly basis, and without the right farm bill programs, farmers just don't have the ability to move into the next year.
Yeah, let me give you one more example. You know, I've been one of the leading voices of trying to limit these subsidy payments to farm entities, and the level I thought made sense was if you're a farm entity with an adjusted gross income of $250,000 every year, that's after you back out all the expenses and your input costs, that would be the cutoff for your eligibility for subsidies. Well, what we were finally settling on in the Congress was about a $700,000 adjusted gross, which I think is very generous. But at the end of the day last week and behind closed doors without anyone being notified, they went to $950,000 adjusted gross income. So for some reason, it kept getting more and more generous, which means this is going to benefit the real big agribusinesses out there and make it harder, you know, to have funds available for conservation programs or for agricultural research or for other things that our family farmers could really benefit from.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking about the Farm Bill. My guests are Democratic Representative Ron Kind of La Crosse and President of Wisconsin Farmers Union, Darren Von Ruden. One of the things that would affect Wisconsin farmers the most are these changes to the dairy industry and basically setting up a program that would make sure that dairy prices aren't as volatile as they have been in recent years. I'm wondering, Darren, if you can kind of break this down for us and help us understand what exactly is happening.
It's called the Dairy Security Agreement. What it is, it's going to become an insurance program similar to the crop insurance programs right now. Any milk produced under 400 million pounds will be subsidized by the government. Anything over that will have a premium adjusted or on top of that. So if you're a farm of 220-plus cows or so, you're probably going to be paying for some of that premium to cover your margin costs, and that's what the insurance is doing, is covering your margin costs. So, for instance, let's take the next 6 months here now. Feed prices are down a little bit. Milk prices are going to be going up according to what's happening with the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The margin's going to be fairly good here for the first 6 months, but what's going to happen a year and a half, 2 years after farmers with the lower feed costs and higher milk prices always means more production. For some reason, we can always continue to make more if things are right. So in, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, when we have an excess of production, then farmers will be getting, you know, could possibly be getting a check from the insurance companies when the margins get below that $4 level. In the meantime, until that happens, until the Dairy Security Act gets in place, the milk program is going to stay in place, which is, in my opinion, is one of the best safety nets that dairy farmers could ever have. It protected the federal government from massive overlays, plus it protected, you know, every farmer got something out of that. The big guys are complaining because they felt they didn't get everything. Well, I really didn't get everything neither, because I'm not milking 200 cows, and therefore I couldn't get the maximum dollars allowed, but I did get what my farm allowed me to get. So that's going to stay in place until the Dairy Security Act gets enacted. Once that comes, then farmers are going to have to make that choice. Do we want to buy for minimum insurance, or do we want to buy for maximum insurance? You can buy any from insurance for anywhere from a $4 margin protection up to an $8 margin protection. So, you know, every farm is going to be different. The thing that scares me the most is that there wasn't a supply management part of the farm bill. And without that, I think the federal government could be looking at outlays of taxpayer money to take product off the market to stabilize prices.
And from what I understand, this change will not necessarily affect consumers that much.
We'll have to wait and see where the market prices ultimately go. But, you know, our dairy farmers are in a very unique and especially challenging position. They're producing a commodity that is highly perishable, that fluid milk. It's got to be sold right away. They don't have the luxury of storing it in bins and waiting for market price to recover and then sell into the market. And that's why they're subject to these roller coaster rides of high and low prices. And unfortunately, with the power of supply and demand out there, when prices go up, a lot of producers tend to crank up production in order to increase their cash flow, and that tends to flood the market then with excess product, and then the price plummets. And so it's up and down all the time. So what they're trying to do now with this margin insurance program is to incent milk insurance with some premium support payments for them at a lower level. But if they exceed a certain quota amount, they're going to get less assistance in making those insurance premium payments. So instead of a supply management, it's more of an incentive to not overproduce when prices go up. This has not been tested before, so I guess it's only time will tell whether or not it works and whether we have a better chance of controlling overproduction in the future. My concern was always we're in a less position here in western Wisconsin to crank up production because we have limited size herds and limited terrain to do it, unlike the big producers out west, and they can really crank it up in a moment's notice. So whether this is enough incentive to get the big producers not to crank up production when prices do get healthy again is the real test with this program.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about the Farm Bill. My guests are Darren Von Ruden, he's president of Wisconsin Farmers Union, and Democratic Representative Ron Kind of La Crosse. We heard a lot about country of origin meat labeling leading up until the Farm Bill. Where do we stand with that at this point?
Well, it will stay in the bill. It's called COOL, country of origin labeling, even though a lot of the cattlemen and beef producers out there didn't want to see it in there. So there was a major battle that was going on.
They had said that it would be an added expense and just being able to track.
Yeah, this was especially the southern beef owners because they are getting some of their calves from Mexico. I understand that's a problem spot for them, and they'd have to label then that beef coming in as coming from Mexico. But I've always been a big believer in more information, more transparency is better for both farmers and consumers. If consumers want to know, you know, where their food is coming from, then let's try to do a good job of making that perfectly apparent to them.
Darren, will this affect many producers in Wisconsin, or were there some other meat labeling issues that you had your eye on?
The number is that 85 to 90% of all consumers want to know where their food comes from, and it doesn't matter if it's beef or fish or chicken or vegetables. They want to know where it's coming from nowadays. And so to keep the COOL language was huge for us. We've been fighting that battle. Actually, National Farmers Union is in a court case right now defending or helping the USDA defend the COOL labeling that's going on. So it was really huge for us to keep that in there. And it, you know, as far as affecting farmers, there's a lot of smaller Wisconsin farmers that like to label their product, you know, and want to be able to do that. And it just makes sense to have something that is available for farmers to use. I know the multinational corporations that are fighting at the most, you know, for another half a cent or probably even less than half a cent, they can put that label on every package that says, you know, made or cattle come from Canada or cattle from Mexico or U.S. born cattle, you know. And I would think anybody that has a strong history with the U.S. would be more than willing to buy that labeled piece of meat that's coming from the United States of America.
So one of the more contentious parts of the Farm Bill is funding to the SNAP program, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Eventually, they decided about $8 billion would be cut or realigned, depending on who you talk to. That's the words they use from this program. Can you help us understand, Congressman Kind, what's happened with SNAP?
Well, first of all, it was a drastic improvement from what the House passed last year, where they were calling for over $40 billion worth of cuts out of the nutrition title. That, no question, would have impacted low-income kids, individuals with disabilities, older Americans, exactly that vulnerable population that shouldn't be targeted, you know, for significant cuts. But nevertheless, they still ended up with $8 billion in cuts. This is in addition to $5 billion that's already taken place and another $5 billion that's going to take place. So you're back in the $15, $16 billion range when you include all the rest of the cuts through sequestration and other appropriation decisions. And I felt it was unnecessary. Again, when you've got subsidies going to multi-billionaires, when you've got these huge subsidies going to large agribusiness, subsidies going to Brazil cotton farmers, let's look to those areas first for cost savings reform before we go after the most vulnerable. Now, there are 16 states, Wisconsin being one of them, that will be impacted by these cuts. There's something that the governor can do in order to alleviate that. I've already been in touch with his office to see if they're willing to do it. It involves the LIHEAP program, the Low-Income Energy Assistance Program that a lot of people rely on here in the state. So if we can work with the state and the legislature and make some adjustments there, then maybe we can minimize the full impact of what's being called for.
All in all, is this farm bill much different than previous farm bills? And if it's not, why did it take so long to pass this?
I think it's part of the budget or the negotiating process. It used to be that there was a lot more willingness in our nation's capital to negotiate. Here in the last couple of election cycles, we've seen more of the, extremes. Let's go all the way to one side or all the way to the other side. And so I think that made this process a lot harder. There is a little bit of difference in this farm bill, not a lot, but there is some difference, which we've seen that in every farm bill cycle. There's always going to be some changes to it, either trying to save on some budget overlays or else making sure that the sectors of agriculture or the hungry get what they need.
Yeah, I would agree with Darren. I think everything has become so much more difficult to do and accomplish in Washington, and I think it comes from a lack of listening, lack of cooperation. But the U.S. Senate, 2 years ago, passed the comprehensive bipartisan farm bill, and they've been, in essence, waiting for the House of Representatives to do our work. And the major sticking point was the nutrition title. $40 billion worth of cuts coming out of nutrition. It was clear the Senate would not accept it, nor would the president sign a farm bill calling for those deep cuts.
Ron Kind of La Crosse is Wisconsin's 3rd District Congressman. Darren Von Ruden of Westby is president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. They spoke about passage of the long-delayed farm bill. It passed the U.S. Senate Tuesday and House of Representatives late last week. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Stroob, and our senior producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this and other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find extended interviews and photos. And if you'd like to comment on our program or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. You can also find Newsmakers on Facebook, updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.